is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Matt Fry.
Now, on Thursday night, while most of us were asleep, America was treated to the State of the Union Address in Congress. This is an annual event where the President of the United States goes to Congress and addresses Congress and gives his State of the Union speech, looks ahead to the coming year, celebrates the triumphs of the previous year. And, you know, it's a way of kind of setting out the stall, the White House's stall to the rest of the nation. The audience, rather like the audience for all these big events, from the Oscars to the Super Bowl to this particular speech, has dwindled over time as people consume it on bits of social media, or they don't watch it at all, they're just not interested. But this one was particularly important for Joe Biden because, you know, as a man who's 81 years old, who will be sworn in if he gets reelected at the age of 82, who will leave office at the age of 86 and arguably sounds a lot older than that, it was very important for him to kind of reboot the Biden image and convince the American people that he is very much compos mentis. He can read an auto cue and he can deliver a speech with a punch, which is exactly what he did. Even critics of Joe Biden will admit that this was a pretty powerful speech with a couple of fluffs here and there. But on the whole, it was punchy. He brought the fight to Donald Trump and remarkably didn't mention Trump by name once. Let's just give you a little bit of a flavor of the speech. So here's the first clip when he's talking about the January the 6th assault on Capitol Hill. Listen.
We must be honest. The threat to democracy must be defended. My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that. This is the moment to speak the truth and to bury the lies. Here's the simple truth. You can't love your country only when you win.
Of course, what you can't see there is half the chamber, the Democrats get up and give a standing ovation. The other half, the Republicans, sort of sit down, very much glued to their seats and scowling at those lines. And then Mr. Biden criticized the former president, never called him Trump, not once, for encouraging Russia to attack any of the U.S.'s NATO allies whom he considers to have not met their financial obligations. Listen.
A former Republican president tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want. Bowing down to a Russian leader, I think it's outrageous, it's dangerous, and it's unacceptable.
There we go. Biden rebooted on top form. Let's go to Simon Marks, LBC's US correspondent, a dear friend of the program. Dear friend altogether. Simon, I haven't spoken to you for ages. How's that possible?
Lovely to hear your voice, Matt. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you.
And good.
Interesting listening to that speech because I've spoken to people in Washington in the last 24 hours who were literally watching every other speech, perhaps this one as well, from behind the sofa. They were so nervous and they very much were jumping on top of the sofa at the end of it.
Yes, well, I think there is no question whatsoever that the Democrat elite is thrilled and delighted by that speech. And let's be honest, Joe Biden was almost a different man. I mean, I thought there were almost echoes of Al Gore in that speech and the numerous various personalities that he displayed during the 2000 election. Mm. I mean, we were promised by the White House this was going to be a very energized Joe Biden. We certainly haven't seen a very energized Joe Biden in quite a while, and we did see one on Thursday night in the well of Congress. The question is, did it translate to the public? And the polling that was conducted in the immediate aftermath of the speech is mixed on that. A CNN poll shows that 65% of viewers offered a positive review of Biden's speech. 17 percentage points were advanced in terms of the answer to the question, is the country heading in the right direction? Before the speech, only 45% of the public said the country was heading in the right direction. After the speech, 62% said they now thought the country was moving in the right direction. So all of those are pretty good numbers for Biden. But behind the numbers, the Washington Post is pointing out today that the 65% that had a positive view of the speech was the lowest number of any State of the Union address that CNN has polled in the past 25 years. The previous low point was Donald Trump's 2018 State of the Union address that 70% of viewers said they felt good about. And the 35% of viewers, about a third, who offered a very positive review of the speech was exactly the same number as last year's State of the Union address, in which we did not see the very energized Joe Biden. So look, Democrats are daring to dream that he's turned everything around. He's now about to engage in a massive advertising blitz in the swing states, those all-important battleground states that sometimes vote Democrat, sometimes vote Republican, always determine the outcome of the presidential election. He's got enormous ground to make up in many of those swing states against Donald Trump, and even against himself, Matt, because of the unpopularity that he's facing in places like Michigan and Minnesota, largely driven by his response to the crisis in the Middle East. And of course, one speech a presidential campaign cannot turn around. You can't just capture lightning in a bottle once. He's got to do it again and again and again, all the way to November.
But is he up for that? Can he do that, do you think?
I think that's a massive task. I mean, there is no evidence, based on what we have seen from Joe Biden over the last 6 months, that in the next eight, he can suddenly become a different man on the campaign trail. They are now at the White House and within the campaign adopting a let Joe be Joe approach to all of this. Jill Biden and others have argued that mistakes have been made by trying to force him into sort of campaign boxes that he's not entirely comfortable in. And I think it was very interesting that he finally found language in the speech to talk effectively about the economic recovery in the United States. He didn't, not only did he not use the word Trump in the speech, which is interesting because on the campaign trail recently, he's been relentlessly attacking his opponent by name, but there was another word he didn't use in the speech, and it was Bidenomics. He's been going out all over the country trying to talk about Bidenomics and how his approach to building the economy from the bottom up and the middle out has worked. Instead, what we heard in that speech was a much more effective cadence, which is that he's turning setback into comeback. And that is going to be the nature of the argument that he now takes to the campaign trail, trying to explain in really basic terms to Americans why they should be feeling good about his handling of the economy, why their own 401k retirement accounts are now thriving, why inflation is slowly coming down, why the Fed has effectively handled interest rates and damped down the threat of a recession. Those are the arguments he's got to advance, rather than talking in very technocratic terms about a phrase invented by the Wall Street Journal.
And not a very pretty phrase either.
No, exactly.
I'm surprised that it was 65% who approved when you give the divided nature, the partisan nature, 50-50 nature of American politics. I'm surprised that 70% approved of Trump's speech in 2018. Now, these are extraordinary numbers, but maybe I'm just wrong on that. The thing that...
You can approve, can't you, without necessarily thinking that you're going to vote for the guy? Yeah. I guess.
Indeed, I think that's maybe I'm being just far too narrow minded here about this, and that often happens. That often happens. Let me ask you this then. I mean, I'm imagining that the team around Biden, I've seen them in action at various summits, are just, you know, very divided and scratching their heads and tearing their hairs out about whether to have more Joe on the campaign trail, so more, you know, robust aviator specs, Scranton, Pennsylvania rhetoric, or whether that, you know, opens up the possibility, the risk of more gaffes and fluffs and, you know, the guy basically sounding like someone you want to take the car keys away from.
Well, that's the risk, isn't it? I mean, and that was the risk on Thursday night. He could not afford to put a foot wrong, and he didn't put a foot wrong during the course of that speech. I mean, there were moments that it was a tough listen and a tough watch, but the opening third and the closing 15 minutes were pretty electrifying. I mean, certainly electrifying by Joe Biden's normal standards. The problem is that he is slowing down. We all know this. They push back on it, but it's, you know, you're trying to tell the voters that they're not seeing what they're really seeing when you say he's not aging and he's not slowing down. He obviously is. And many of the gaffes and errors that he makes are made at the end of a very long day.
Sure.
That press conference where, you know, it was all designed to show us that his cognitive capacities were perfect, but then he managed to
He came back for more.
And that, of course, was, you know, and mistook the president of Egypt for the president of Mexico. Mm. That was at sort of 8 o'clock at night. It is not a good idea to put him in an ad hoc press conference at 8 p.m. at night.
But I guess the key point that he's making, and he made it in the speech, and he tackled the subject head on, if I'm not mistaken, was that, look, I may be old and I may make the occasional mistake, but with age comes wisdom and judgment and perspective. I was once accused of being the youngest senator in the U.S. Senate, which is true. Now I'm accused of being, you know, the oldest president. But actually, that lifespan has given me something that the other guy doesn't have. And what would you rather have? Someone who fluffs it occasionally and is a bit doddery in public, but has judgment and wisdom, or someone who's on trial in four different cases, including for overturning democracy?
Yes, I mean, there was that wonderful line, as you point out, where he says, I've been told I'm too young, and I've been told I'm too old. And in fact, he really was too young. When he was first elected to Congress,
he was 29, I think,
and he had to wait until his 30th birthday. So he literally had an office outside the congressional compound where he was hiring staff and putting everything together, not able to get into the building and into his real office in the building until he passed his 30th birthday. And so now at the other bookend of his career, he's being told he's too old. I think in many ways, the outcome of this election may come down to a basic question. Which of these two candidates can prove to be more disciplined? Can Joe Biden not only continue to be the Joe Biden that we saw on Thursday night, but find it within him to avoid some of these unforced errors that have dogged him over the last several months? Or can Donald Trump, the man that he faces, be sufficiently disciplined to stop shooting from the hip and make sure that he can attract not only the voters that have backed Nikki Haley, who's now, of course, dropped out of the race for the Republican Party nomination, clearing his way to be the party's standard bearer, those disaffected Republicans, many of whom say they are never Trump voters, and equally, can a disciplined Donald Trump campaign even reach out to independents and floating voters who once again will determine the outcome of this election? Mm. Now, you know, you look at Joe Biden and you think he's unlikely to avoid gaffes, and you look at Donald Trump and you think there is no possible way he's going to be disciplined for 8 months.
Well, you look at Donald Trump and you say he's unlikely to avoid Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump is still Donald Trump's worst enemy.
Exactly.
I mean, it would be, you know, if I was advising Trump, I would say, listen, mate, you know, forget revenge, forget scoring points. If you want to get into the White House, for goodness sake, do something sensible. You know, have a woman as your vice presidential candidate, if that makes any difference at all. You know, rein in your rhetoric. And he would probably say, listen, this has worked for me. I'm the nominee, despite being in court, you know, half the time.
Yeah,
I mean, it's astonishing.
And that's absolutely the central contradiction within the Trump campaign, right? If you wanted to win this presidential election, Nikki Haley would be your vice presidential candidate, because by putting her on the ticket, you would immediately unify the party around you, and you would be in a position to appeal to those all-important centrist floating voters. But the problem with putting Nikki Haley on the ticket is that she's going to make demands in response to that request. And those demands will be for him to commit not to shredding NATO, commit to supporting Ukraine, commit to a much more Ronald Reagan-style approach and much more orthodox-style approach to Republican politics. And what the Trump insiders, including the former president, all believe is that the mistake he made the first time round was accommodating people like Nikki Haley and even less ideologically driven figures than Nikki Haley within his government, and that what he is intent on doing second time round is making sure that his government is only made up of demonstrable proven Make America Great Again loyalists, the absolute acolytes who have shown fealty to
but
him.
But that might not win you the election,
and that's
right?
the problem, isn't it? There's the contradiction. Yeah, can you win the election if you engage in that kind of scorched earth ideological campaign? It's a huge question.
And one we shall revisit many times. Simon Marks, a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much, Niamh, for getting up at an unspeakable hour.